and welcome to Happy Horror Time. My name is Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert, and today's special guest is one major league hunk. He played Springwood High School's strong but sensitive jock, Dan Jordan, in A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. And after surviving Freddy Krueger's killing spree alongside final girl Alice, he returned in A Nightmare on Elm Street 5 and was the father of her dream child. But unfortunately, he met his demise in an excruciatingly painful motorcycle fusion-y cyborg dream sequence. Right. Please welcome to the podcast the very dreamy Danny Hassel.
Yes, that's me, one major league hunk.
How many times have you heard the major league hunk line, by the way?
Quite a bit. But you know what? It could be a lot worse. So I'm
that's
okay.
True. I would love that if it was attached to me.
If I was just only known as major league hunk throughout my career, we're good. We're good.
Hunky guy. I'm like, me still? Oh, yeah, I'm still hunky. Yeah.
So, you know, we love to like take things back to before, like people, what it was like growing up and stuff. And what we were wondering, where did you grow up and how did you just first get involved in acting?
I'm not like a full acting story. Everyone, like, I think when they become actors, they lie and go, yes, I wanted to put on shows my whole life. And like, look, mom, that's not true at all for me. You know, I was like a regular kid. I wanted to be like an army guy and football player, cop, whatever. But I grew up in I'm in an RV now, but no, we grew up really humble. I grew up in a trailer in Northern California in a place called Cottonwood, which is near Redding. It's 100 miles. It's like 600 miles from Los Angeles, up near Oregon by Mount Shasta, but it's near nothing. So I grew up in the middle of nowhere. And so I didn't get into acting until I moved to Los Angeles playing sports. And then when I was playing sports, I was going broke, even though you can get on scholarship at SC, whatever, you still don't get money. So I was trying to play football. I was starving to death. And then I met an agent that was not only represented athletes and models and actors and all that. And that's it. From there, I got a manager and started. At first, I didn't take him. I thought he was just this guy who wanted to take me out to dinner. Because, you know, he's just like, yeah, that's what I thought. You know, I was like, no, I don't want to go out to dinner with you. You know,
you're like, where's this going?
Hollywood.
That's what I totally was like, no, bro. I mean, nice meeting you and all that. But then, like, for real. And then when I kind of blew him off, the guy was like, he 3 weeks later was super pissed off at me because I blew off all these like important meetings I didn't realize that were actually important. So, and then from there, I took it serious, like not serious, but you know, I mean, it's like, wow, you can do this as a career. And so I completely abandoned sports and just started doing acting and started, I got a couple commercials and a couple episodic television shows. And then obviously Nightmare on Elm Street, which ended up being number one at the box office.
That's right. I saw it. My brother took me, I begged my brother Trevor and I went.
And I was just way too
young.
You
were way too young. But as a kid, were horror movies on your radar? Like, did you grow up watching them?
Oh, here's the thing. No, again, that's another funny one. I love science fiction. And I love going to the movies. I mean, I love being an actor. That's really fun. Making movies is totally a blast. And even making a horror film is a blast. I just did another one with this guy named Hayden Newman. I just did a movie with another movie with Lisa Wilcox.
Yes. Oh, we have that down. Don't worry to ask about. Yeah. We are going to ask about
that.
That's
a cool reunion. It's really fun. Anyhow, what was I going to say? So yeah, horror movies though, because I lived out in the boonies by myself. I never liked, I mean, you know, when I was in the 80s when everyone was like, that was the heyday of it, you know, Jason and all that, Halloween. No, they were too scary. I'd be at home by myself. I'm like, oh my God, what was that? Oh my God. You know, I don't know. And then Freddy Krueger, the original Nightmare on Elm Street, that freaked me out. Like that was just too scary. And he didn't talk. And it was before, like every now it's like overplayed. He's like, bitch, everything, bitch.
But you mean before Bon Appetit, bitch?
Yeah. So, but anyhow, seeing this boogeyman in the darkness say, bitch, back in the day, and that was freaky deaky. I was like, whoa, that Nightmare on Elm Street, you know. But then by the time I came on the scene in Nightmare 4, it wasn't really so scary anymore. I mean, it was scary, obviously. My daughter doesn't watch it. You know, I have a 4-year-old, but it's like, she doesn't watch Freddy Krueger at all. But, for the audience, Nightmare 4 was more fun and kind of campy, I guess, you know?
Yeah, no, well, I mean, well, moving right into Nightmare 4, what was the audition process like for the role of Dan? Like, do you remember scene you had to do or who you read with?
Yeah, I totally, Annette Benson. I remember everybody because they had cast some pretty big movies before and Rennie Harlan was already somebody. And of course I had heard of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise by then, because Nightmare 3, even though I wasn't a fan, I hate the soundtrack to this day of Nightmare 3, all those hair bands. Sorry, guys. I don't mean to make it.
You don't like the Dream Warriors, big metal bands?
What was it, Token?
So big. People are like Dokken fans. And I was at this San Antonio, I was at this convention, and I was looking up at the Jumbotron, and I was just frozen on how bad this one video was. I was like, whoa, hair bands were terrible. anyhow, people loved it. Spandex and hair and whatever, makeup. But what was my point? Oh, yeah. So Nightmare 4, I got the sides, but, and of course it was like, you know, a cattle call. They were looking for a million dudes. And the day I read, before I had left the building, Rennie Harlan came and just said, hey, if you read like this one more, can you do this again? And I basically just acted like myself. And then he was like, you got the role. And that was it. I knew the day I read, I got it.
And so wow. I was like, yeah. So you just read, and is it true? Because I know, like, on Never Sleep Again and everything that you said, and I've read that, like, your character didn't have a name at first, and that you could gave the character. Is it that you gave the character the name, or they did, or what?
I looked around or whatever, and that's just what they did on the first day, and then they just kept it Dan. And I was like, that was the joke. Like, he's such a shitty actor. I was like, just give him the same name. He'll do fine.
That's so funny. And they were just like, oh, cool. Yeah, it can be your name.
Do you still have that Letterman jacket?
They didn't even, what's it called? At that time, Tuesday Night was cast because she was replacing Patricia Arquette. Mm-hmm. So she had already got the role. And I got the role that day. And then they hadn't decided which of the final Lisa was. There was a dark-haired Lisa and blonde Lisa Wilcox. And I had come back. Then the next day, after I learned that I got the role, they're like, hey, would you mind reading with the Lisas? And I was like, okay, I guess so. And so I met
Lisa's. Do you remember who the other Lisa was that was in?
You know, what's funny is I don't, to this man, it was only like 80 years ago. So
it was Lisa Rinna.
Yeah.
So she was a sweet girl. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just different colored hair. That's, I don't know what they were like, you know, different, but whatever. They ended up going with Lisa Wilcox.
Yeah.
But, so when you got the role, did you go back and do research and watch 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah. I already knew what 1 was. I was old enough to. I remember 1, but I was also scared of it. And this is, there was this new thing called HBO. it had like the Warriors on there and One Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, like some rich families on the block had HBO. You're like, hey, to watch cable, you know, so you could, that's where I knew of Nightmare on Elm Street 1. And then went back and watched the other ones and was like, you know, and it, you know, ours was like, just to be, I mean, it kind of, 4, 3, 4, and 5 kind of have continuity. The rest of them are all on their own and just their own deal.
I was going to say that because 3, I mean, 3 of the characters obviously continue on to 4. So it's important that it continues that storyline. But like, yeah, 2 is completely different ones. And then 1, there's like the Nancy connection.
Well, you know, the Friday 13th series and the Halloween series, they're very consistent.
There's only about 700 different timelines. So
Oh, and then, you know what? Someone just, I just found out that Robert, or Freddy, the kills in those, like Halloween and Nightmare, or the other one,
Friday 13th.
There's like 400 people have been killed in those, and Robert's like 40.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So I'm pretty rare. I'm like an astronaut that I've been killed by. You know, I'm like, it's pretty rare to be killed by Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's true. You're right. The body count is a lot less. They spend more time. Way less. I feel like. On the nightmares and like these
right. Some nerd in the audience totally knew. He's like, well, actually, by regard, he threw out the stats. I'm like, no kidding, dude, right on. I was like, I didn't know that.
They're like, well, actually, I watch every kill every night before bed.
Me too.
He knew exactly how many kills, and it was Jason and Mike Myers have way more than Robert.
No, that's true. So, you know, we've heard a ton of different things about the director of Nightmare 4, Rennie Harlan. And I was just wondering, from your perspective, what was his directing style like? Like, any memories or stories of working with him?
Yeah, he was real honest and real, like, what do you call the word? Not fake in any kind of way. His direction was real straightforward. You know, there was like, he was hands-on as well, like right beside the cameraman, and just kind of, for me, it was really easy. I mean, I had an easy character to play, so, you know, I got, his direction was pretty easy, and he was easy. I got along with him really well, you know.
And I guess now that we heard your background, you were a sports guy, so you were playing like
totally was like every what if you look at my resume, they're like, he plays a quarterback in high school. The next one, oh, he plays a quarterback in college. And then he's like, oh, he's a guest star as a quarterback. And you know, I was just like five different movies or same fucking dude.
So I guess I don't have to ask you what kind of preparation research did you do for the role. You're like, oh, I lived my life.
Right. No, the more I think about it, it's really funny. Yeah. 90% of the time I was the jock dude, Leatherman jacket. Whatever.
Yeah. Did you get to keep your Leatherman jacket from Nightmare 4?
Like a dummy. I had it. And then it somehow it ended up out there on eBay. So.
Oh, no.
So someone tried to find me and give it to me though, or something. I don't know what happened to it, but there's probably. Dude in LA wearing it right now.
If you heard that, if you're listening to this podcast and you have that jacket,
it's not me.
So, you know, and speaking of Rennie, I know another thing was that there was some, I guess, or he talked about there was like tension with Bob Shay. Did you know anything about this while the movie was filming? Any tension on set?
Never with me, because I'm always like happy, what is it called? Good time Charlie guy. You know what I mean? I don't like get caught up in the drama. I didn't know, you know, they always keep it away from me. And I was just happy to be there every day. I was a kid, you know what I mean? I was like, this is the best job ever. Oh my God. I didn't want to argue with anyone. So yeah, there might've been stuff going on that went over my head, you know,
but that's great. At least because I can see that, like, if there's tension and the actors have to deal with it too, that could really affect performances. So kind of shielding you guys from it.
The actors are full of crap, man. Even, you know, I mean, they're like, oh my God, there was no filtered water for 2 days. It was the worst. You know what I mean? The shit they complain about is never ceases to amaze me. Like, so, and they still do it. So, I mean, so besides them being like that, then if there is a real like technical problem or some kind of scheduling thing, it throws actors into a tip.
Then I have to ask, were there any divas on set on the movie? I mean, you don't have to out anyone unless you want to.
Yeah. Me. I'm just kidding.
You are the diva.
Where the fuck are my egg whites? Every day I'm like, you know what? Just what the fuck? This is a cold latte. I'd throw it at people.
That's a healthy food.
I feel like in the 80s, did people even know about egg whites? Like we were still watching the eggs being cracked in those drug commercials. No,
there was like one juice bar. I was around before Starbucks. You're like, we got to go to the coffee shop. You know what I mean? Like classic.
Like Friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got to work with the staples of Lisa Wilcox and Robert Englund in two films. Do you have any fun stories about those two?
What a blast, right? Like Lisa and I are like brother and sister. She's attractive. I never got to like, just like, you know, that usually happens, but she was super duper married back then. So it was like, it was strictly like fake, you know, like, yeah, it was like, there was never anything happened off screen or whatever, but we always hung out a lot. So we became like really good friends. And then same with Robert, because I did so much makeup. I had all kinds of crap done to me in both movies. And back then they were so excited about like putting that thing on you, the goo all over your face, the straws in your nose. And then they take it off and make like a cast of you, you know what I mean? And then they put it in the pickup truck. They did it. I had a lot of stuff, special effects. So then, everybody got those fucking body casts. I don't care if you were like doing a scene that required like nothing. They're like, oh, put a body cast on that person. You know, and so all these dudes get everybody had one, you know. Oh my God. But yeah, Robert was a fucker. He was like every, you know what I mean? He would just like, he was a fun talker. The first time I ever saw him in makeup, right? So I'd met him without makeup on. And now we're like a week into the Nightmare 4. And we were filming next to a, like a junior high, like kindergarten, not junior high, I'm sorry, like elementary school, like, you know, little kids, like kindergarten through whatever, like third grade. And there's all the trailers and movie stuff over here. And then some people were like, little kids were saying, Freddie would bring their recess, right? And I'm like, those kids are pretty little. Do they really know what Robert's all about? You know? And so they're like gathering by the fence, you know, it's a big chain link fence, whatever. And then Robert was in his trailer and I had never seen him, you know what I mean? I was like, this is the 80s, so this makeup was pretty freaking realistic, right? You'd never seen, he had his fake teeth and his hair and everything was all greasy and had the glove. And so I'd never seen him with all the shit on, you know? So I was like, I wanted to see him too. So I'm waiting for him to come out of his trailer, you know, and now by this time, the kids were like all along the fence. And then he comes out of the trailer in character and just goes and kind of like saunters out. And these kids went ape shit. They thought he was real. These kids went everywhere screaming. You see like teacher's aide chasing all these kids. And I was like, oh shit, he does look scary, man. He's pretty real looking, you know? So
I would be scared.
That's amazing. Yeah. And how funny is it that kids are cheering for him and the character's a child murderer?
Well,
throw me away. So the other day, I know. So this, I mean, this is also bizarre, just to parallel what you're saying. So yeah, these little kids, I was like, when they were screaming Freddy, Freddy, I was like, do they fucking know who he is? we're going to find out. And some kids were like literally walking on air. They were running away so hard. They were scared shitless. It's like, what the fuck is that guy? And so, but yeah, so this other day, I was doing something similar to this, but more of live, like people were coming and talking, you know, and this man comes up and he goes, oh man, he's got this little child, like a 5-year-old. We watched it this morning. We watched it. You know, I was like, and she loves it. You know, she's been watching it since she was 3. Cool. I love your movie. And great. I love you. I love your movie. And he walks off and the guy behind me goes, super cool. You're a terrible parent.
That's hilarious. I know you always talk about it's like the kids. I mean, I started watching horror movies, I guess, fairly young. I was about 9 or 10, but like I feel like there are, like, you see these stories like these 5-year-olds that just love these horror things, and you're like, where are their parents?
It's too much.
Yeah, it's a little too much, you know. 10 is early. I mean, 10, 9 and 10. But I mean, it depends on how smart you are, how like.
I was a genius.
Genius.
Exactly. You totally, yeah. You're like, I know. When you're a child genius, it doesn't affect you.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. When you're the real life Doogie Howser, like Tim.
When Harvard came knocking, I said, what?
You're I'm watching horror movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Just enough with this.
I got this.
So, you know, in addition to Lisa Wilcox and yourself, the cast of Nightmare 4, there was a bunch of, you know, hot young stars in it, like Tuesday Night, Andres Jones, Brooke Thies, and of course, Linnea Quigley's boobs. But I was just wondering, did you become close with the rest of the cast while filming? And were there any like behind the scenes romances or hookups between the cast members?
I'll go down the list. All I know is me and Brooke Thies dated a little bit. And we never did nothing too crazy because she was super serious. And she actually, serious, like she's girlfriend material. She's not like the, you know, hit it and quit it kind of girl. So, but we kind of liked each other and we kind of dated a little bit. And then she went on to do a television show. I don't know. It was just the 10 of us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A little busy for me. I was too busy smoking pot and surfing and being a dipshit. So. Anyhow, I don't know, but it didn't. But then I think Andras and Tuesday were an item for a while.
Yeah, we got a little bit of that. We talked to Tuesday Night and she told us a little bit about that.
I don't know, because then we all did become friends because the movie, it'd be nice if we'd all made a bunch of money, but you got a lot of instant fame because it went from, you know, like I said, this tiny little movie to now the lines are around the theater, you know, and that's when. That was like being in a hit band or something, I guess, you know, all of a sudden our song was number one. And what was really fun is to go into movie theaters as a group. Like we did it maybe 3 times as a group and then kind of go in after it started a bit and then kind of sit in the back and watch everybody react. And it was really fun. I had big laughs, like laughing hard a lot, you know what I mean? Cause it was so, it's a fun movie.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Do you have a favorite scene in 4 or 5?
You know, it makes me laugh when every time. Which I still feel, I laugh every time. When we did the in part 4, we're at the Crave Inn, Ode to Wes Craven. Lisa comes, we're in a dream sequence, and Lisa Wilcox's character comes around, and she's like, oh my God, we've done this before. And it does like a loop.
The time loop, yeah.
And then I, in all seriousness, when I did the line, I was like, haven't we done this before? And everyone erupts in laughter every time in the movie theater. And I did that not even trying to get a joke. I was like trying to be serious, like, haven't we done this before? But
it came. What'd she say? I'm driving.
Yeah, she said it's really funny because, do you know, and I'm sure you noticed, but Robert Englund has gone on or has said that is his favorite sequence in the entire Nightmare series, just because it's so trippy. And it said, I think he said it related to how dreams really are, that sometimes you repeat things and time is all fucked up.
No, it is. It's the cheapest. They spent millions of dollars on other kind of gags, and that one costs $0, and it's the best. Like, in the first time, people were like looking at the movie projector, like, is it broken? Like, is it skipping or something? What's happening? You know what I mean? Like, and so, yeah. And then it's funny because I laugh every time because I was not trying to get a laugh out of that line. I was totally trying to go, haven't we done this before?
Like, wait, but before you do the haven't you done this before, did they actually film the same thing multiple times or did they just use the same take?
We did. We did at a bunch of times because Lisa couldn't drive a stick and she actually does it a bunch of times. Like she was learning on the spot on a fucking old truck. It was funnier and shit. She's like, you know, she like jumped because it was a stick shift. So we did do it a bunch of times. And then the way they put it together, it just looks, it looks awesome. And then the actual take, she does it. She drives, you know, drops the clutch and takes off.
So when the movie was all like wrapped, which premiere did you have more fun? Like part four, or part five?
Part four was super fun. That was like, that was the first time I had fans lie to me and say they had all my posters. And I was like, I don't even have a poster. You know? And yeah. I was like, that was fun. And we went, I think we were at somewhere on Hollywood Boulevard where they do the big movies. So that was a big deal. And I was so green at like being involved in like that kind of having a movie premiere or whatever. It was pretty fun. That's Nightmare awesome. Nightmare 5, I think is a really good movie, but they went for the money, just like everything in a franchise. If they'd have waited a year and put Nightmare 5 out a year later, it would have done way better. But it was just like, yeah, Nightmare 4, the TV show, then Nightmare 5. Everything was just like too much Freddy. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's what I was going to ask about next, because I mean, obviously Nightmare 4 comes out in 1988. Nightmare 5 came out only 1 year later. And I'm like, how soon after part 4 did you hear that they wanted to make a sequel? And did you always know that they wanted your character to be in it?
I didn't know, but it was actually, maybe before we even wrapped, it was real soon because they saw the money. Do you know what I mean? They were like, oh, this is a big cash cow. So everyone jumped on the bandwagon. I mean, I guess. I mean, that's what people do, I guess, when they know they have a hot piece of garbage.
when did they contact you and tell you, hey, we want you back? Because you're one of the only two survivors in four.
Really soon after, before the, you know what I mean? That's why I was super excited because I was like, no way. They're putting me in another one and they're asking me back. And the only reason I was like, I must have been nice to the right person. I obviously was kissing the right butt. You know what I mean? I was like, cool. Because it wasn't like my amazing acting prowess got me the job back. You know, I was like, wow. But it was super soon. And then, like I said, I'm bummed that they dumped all of it together because Nightmare 5 actually did terrible at the box office. Went like straight to video almost, you know, and then, but I heard this comedian when Beyonce was like really big and she was like on everything. And she's like, I think I'm going to take a break. And this dude's all, take a break, bitch. You know what I mean? Like, on everything, you know, it was like Freddie on everything. It was like lunch pills, fucking TV shows. Like, and then, you know, he's talking, he's doing commercials and, you know, you're just like, so it kind of took away from like the thunder. It just kind of stole our thunder.
It's like the oversaturation. Were you upset when you found out that they planned to kill off your character in this one? Or did you
no
think
way,
it was a good decision?
When I got the script, as soon as I got the script, because I knew that when they asked me back, I go, oh, wow. And I started thumbing through the script. Like, where do I die? Where, first one to die? Yep, there it is. I knew it. I was like,
you figured that they were going to kill you?
I did, because I was like, there's no way. I go, what is the, you know, because that's kind of the formula they did for 3. Like, if you notice, like, they're the first characters they kill off are the ones that were, I mean, the 4, they killed off all the characters from 3 right away. Uh-huh. And then, that's the formula. Oh, real creative writing. You know what I mean? I was like, thank you guys. Wow. I die like page 4. I'm already starting a death scene. But it was a really cool death scene. So
it was cool. That's what I was going to ask. But one thing I have to say, and Tim and I have talked about this before, is that I just hate that it's become like such like a, I guess, a trope that it's like you get invested in characters and then when you bring them back for the sequel and kill them off right away.
I was like, come on. I'm like, you know, whatever. But that, like, again, there goes the creativity. And then what they wanted, they tried to wrap up in 5. If you notice, there's all these like heavy like topics and they wanted to do that, but that was the purpose. And then all the death scenes were actually pretty intense, you know, like mine and then the Greta, the one that feed her. And so that there, you know, there was some pretty intense special effects that had to go on. And then a lot of times in movies, it's like a logistic thing. They're like, let's just knock out these scenes real quick so we can get it, you know, get the work on those other things. That like the special effects stuff takes more days sometimes, and they just, it's more like people working than doing regular just dialogue scenes, you know. So that movie, the number 5, was so rushed. It looked like I think they're called the Coen brothers or whatever. They do those movies where it looks like they're on a stage where they just move the camera. You know what I mean? Like, have you ever seen Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou?
Yeah.
Who are those brothers? Those dudes that make those movies.
Coen
they also
brothers?
Are they the Coen? They're the Coen brothers.
Anderson.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? They do that though with the camera. They do that with their movies a lot. They did the other one with the hotel where they're basically like on a big set. You know, that's how they filmed Nightmare 5. It was like a soundstage over here doing like whatever special effects that were going on. Maybe right here, this middle stage was doing like dialogue scenes, and then I'd be over here on a motorcycle. You know, so it was wild.
And it was, you guys filmed out in the middle of nowhere where there was like no air conditioning. I read that somewhere.
But not even, what they did is because they still, it wasn't New Line Cinema like it is now, New Line Time Warner. It was still just New Line Cinema. They still were an independent film company. So they didn't use studio. They didn't use a studio. And there was this pasta factory like over here in Culver City that's like just, they make spaghetti and whatever, you know. Well, they had moved locations, so it was this massive empty warehouse, and then that's what they did. They rented that and built sound stages in there. It's still there to this day. Now it's a Ross and a Whole Foods or whatever.
That's amazing.
Let's go on a field trip.
Like Ross and Whole Foods.
Yeah, I know, you tell me that every time we drive by here. I'm like, you know that.
That's awesome. Well, what I was going to say before we get to your death scene, okay, so one very specific question. So I know that opening scene, which is like the artistic love scene, I know that's not you, that was Michael Bailey Smith who played Super Freddy. But I guess my question is, why didn't they just have you and Lisa Wilcox do that scene?
That was it too. It was like Lisa was very like close set stuff. It was just, you know, there's a scene where me and Robert and her are all in bed together. It's really funny. I always say that all the time. I did a threesome with Robert and Lisa. But whatever. No, there's this really funny part where I'm like in bed. Or no, Robert's in bed with her. And there's a dream sequence where she wakes up and Robert's in bed.
Yeah.
Slides out of bed. And then I get in the bed. Or I get next to her. And then they cut it together to where it's really, you know, it looks like it was Robert and then it's me, you know. But we actually were all in bed while we were filming that. All of us in the same bed. It's really funny.
It's a good jump scare.
Yeah,
exactly. You know which one I'm talking about. So, so that scene, I don't know why they used, and he's huge. He has like big muscles. Like they could just film his ab, you know what I mean? So it's like a big ab. Or mine, I don't know if I had that kind of abs, you know, they weren't like this big.
Well, it's so weird because it's literally the whole first scene is just like random body parts. It's even hard today to even know what body parts are. And then when we saw Never Sleep Again and heard it wasn't even you guys, I'm like, well, that's weird.
It was weird. I couldn't. And then when I left and they go, damn, this is your double. And I'm like, oh, hey, dude, really? You know what I mean? He's massive. He's a massive guy. And he was super jacked. And I'm like, all right, man. I hope people, you know, now I can't take my shirt off ever because I don't look like that dude, you know.
He's like 7 feet tall, like 300 pounds.
But yeah, then they, whatever, the way they cut it together, you can't even tell what it is, right? It's just like body parts moving. And then finally there is, though, over the shoulder, because like, it's like, you can definitely, that's my freckles. You can see the freckles. I'm like, wait, that's my back, you know what I mean? So
you're like, I got my back in there, okay?
Yeah, my wife was like, I know that freckles. And I'm like, oh, that.
That's all. So onto the big death scene, which, like you said, it's incredibly intense and just really cool. How long did that entire sequence take to film, and how extensive was all the makeup and prosthetics for it? I
don't know how long it actually took. It had to be up into like 3 weeks because there were different stages of it, like outdoors, indoors, all that. And then like where it started from, like where I remember the wardrobe, there's a prior to me, like, actually getting on the motorcycle, there's a bunch of weird stuff that happens. Like I'm in a dream sequence and I smash through a window
at the pool.
The
pool, right? There's all that. That was fun to film too, because I actually did my own stunt for that, which is like all you do is like throw yourself off a little ledge and land on a thing, but then they throw like fake glass on you, and then I get up and go run to the phone, and then all that. So then that weird little sequence took a lot to like piece together. So I was wearing, because I was in that wardrobe forever, I felt like a pirate.
It was like shredded clothes.
I would look like Castaway or something. I'm like walking around in that for like 2 weeks. And then, but then when it finally came to the scene, I did the little burnout on the motorcycle. And once they saw that I could do that, then it just like kept getting more and more and more like, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And then they got a stunt dude and he could be like, he was a real motorcycle guy. And so it just grew and grew and grew. And then once we got done with the motorcycle stuff, we went into a soundstage. Now we're back over there in Culver City with the place with no AC and all that. There's like five different scenes going on. And, but it was really wild. It was a big stage, like a stage in the middle of, you know, now it's up on a platform and the motorcycle is up on that. And it's like black walls all the way around it. So it kind of, it was just like infinite. You couldn't really see. And then I'd get up on the motorcycle and then dudes would stand right next to me and blow air and smoke and debris or whatever. So it looked like I was going really fast, you know? So, and then just like hours of me screaming. Ah!
I like that.
So the wreckage part, when you're underneath like the car after it wrecks, is that, I mean, obviously that's you. I mean, is that real fire?
Yeah. How close were you to all that?
Back in the 80s, all this super sophisticated techniques, right? So what it is I didn't know this until I was doing movie magic, and here we go, you know, it's fucking rubber cement, right? Rubber cement, like the shit you build models with, right? That's super toxic, not safe, but super cool because you can take it then, just like rubber cement, you know, and then dab it places, go over here, dab it over here, dab it over here, and then on action they light them all, so they burn like in these strategic spots, right? Because they can dab it everywhere. Well, yeah. So they got all these spots, you know what I mean, where this big fire, and I have like this amazing thing. That's another thing I didn't know. Another prosthetic piece. It was like my neck had been like ripped out, and like my windpipe was hanging out, and all this stuff. You know what I mean? It was wild. Then I had this patch over my eye, and so I looked completely fucked up, and it looked real as hell. Like you could not.
I thought it looked so good.
Oh no, it was hours. Like three different makeup artists painting the veins and just fucking looked amazing, right? And that was another thing. In between takes, I walked across, there's a neighborhood that's like, you know, full of Hollywood shit, and then right over here these people are like, they have no idea that there's a movie going on right here. And so in between takes, because we like, they took the shortcut, I went through the neighborhood and I went up to this old lady, I go, ma'am, call 911. And she did not think it was funny at all. She kind of cussed at me and like some people thought it was funny. I thought it was funny. I go, oh, I'm just kidding. And she was just miffed.
You should have had Robert Englund run up to her in character and be like,
you think I'm bad?
Bon appetit, bitch.
But yeah, that scene, that whole death scene was super fun. Cause I spent so much time doing special effects, you know? And then like, yeah, that was a blast. Yeah, so dude, it's fucking rubber cement. It's totally toxic, right? So it's like this black smoke comes out of it. But like I said, they can put it in super cool areas and then light it, and it's burning right there on action, you know? So on action, they had all the fires, and they're like, okay, ready? And I'm in there, you know? And it's getting kind of hot. And they're like, and flames, and action. And then I have the line where I have to say, hey, Alice, want to make babies? And so the first time I did it, they're like, let the smoke, let the flames. Okay. And I'm like, oh, it's good. And when I took a breath, I took like a massive bong hit of like rubber cement smoke, you know what I mean? All in there. And I started coughing to where I almost threw up. And then they like sprayed, oh my God, they're like spraying everything with extinguishers. And I'm like, I'm okay. And like, that was the first take. And then they're like, should we be doing this? And I'm like, I got it. We can do it. And then luckily the next one, it wasn't so dramatic. And then it came out like it did. It came out pretty cool. But yeah, that was
great. Turned out great.
Well, and that's the thing. And then what we also saw in Never Sleep Again, that they had to cut tons of that scene, you know, to get an R rating. But I guess there's like an unrated cut available.
So weird. The thing of it is, again, they made it up. So we were trying to figure out how to get the wires to go into my arms and into my legs. So some crazy dude, whoever, I forgot. There's a million art guys, you know, all the art department dudes. And so he figured, let's put it on the arm inside and then we'll pull it out and then we'll run the film backwards and see what it looks like what it does. And sure enough, it looked so amazing, even with the sound and no color, just black and white, because we wanted to see if this thing was going to work. It looked like the wires like came to life and then went into my skin and like into it. It looks super real. Like it penetrates the skin and on my legs. So they figured it out. Ah, this is a great gag. This is so cool. And then the wires into my skin. The people that, whatever they're called, the people that rate your movie or whatever, they said, no, the wires going into the skin is too graphic, X rating. So yeah, that's what they did. For the United States, it's like, you can see the wires. They come up right before they go to my skin, edit. And then it's like super fast. And then now they're in my skin. But
I mean, by today's standards, it seems tame, but it's, you know, it's...
And that must be so defeating.
It's still ridiculous. If you look at all the movies and it's a child molester dude, whatever, killing people, you're like, that's it? That's what you guys are going to give it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I also feel like as the art department people and the director, after working so hard on something like that, and then it gets cut, that's got to be so disappointing.
Right. Or bummed. Except, well, we knew. We were like, dude, that worked. That was so cool. They did a bunch of cool stuff like that. When the seatbelt even attacks me, like, I'm like upside down in the truck and they're just like dropping the seatbelt and letting gravity do that, like come down. And when they roll the film backwards, it looks like it's moving on its own and wrapping around me. So a lot of clever tricks, you know, little, what do they call, practical effects versus like CG stuff, CGI or whatever.
Yeah. Do you personally, I mean, I think I know the answer to this question, but would you prefer they have at least kept Dan alive longer in the film, or were you fine being like the first killed?
I mean, I didn't mind being the first kill, to be honest, because it was like the formula. But yeah, never watched the movie. I wished, yeah, they should have kept it. And because if they were going to, like, yeah, they should have. And then they should have left the movie. They could have even kept him alive. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, the poor guy, you didn't even find out she was pregnant. Yeah.
All that went on, too. So it was like, you know, whatever. But at the same time, I also am glad that, because if you notice in Andras Jones' death in Nightmare 4, where he has like the worst death scene, no offense.
The karate.
Ran out of money. That's what I think. They don't tell the truth. Like, well, we've kind of shot our wads. So Andras, I guess you're just going to have to pretend Freddy's in a room and then, you know, we'll film it, I guess, you know, because we don't have any more money.
I mean, he does a good job. I mean, as a kid, though, I was like,
it's hilarious because he's fighting no one.
He's super funny. Like when he talks about it too, because he totally makes fun of it because how they did him, you know. He's the only one that was killed by Freddy when Freddy wasn't even in the room, or he's
just, yeah.
just a glove.
But it was magical.
So, I'm just like, yeah, they're like, well, we're out of money, so here, Andras, here's a glove, go fight yourself and we'll film it. Okay, cool, that's it.
You know, karate moves,
it's a long scene, it is, too.
Yeah, after the elevator and that, yeah.
No, yeah, that's like, I think that was the last bit of money because they had to like do all that cool thing, and then after that they were like, well, Robert, we can't afford Robert even anymore. So it's just like, you know.
They're like, there's they're no like, Freddy, you're dead.
They're like, we got it. How about if he's pooping in an elevator?
Yeah.
We got
the poop, elevator, and glove. We're good.
This is definitely good writing here. Yeah, whatever.
So we have a little game for you that we're going to play where we're just going to ask questions and you just have to answer with either Nightmare 4 or Nightmare 5, just to kind of get your thoughts on things and a little trivia, but just the thing. So all you got to do is say Nightmare 4, Nightmare 5. So, okay, first question, which do you think is the better sequel?
Nightmare 4.
Yeah, I figured you.
Yeah.
Which one have you seen more times?
Oh my gosh, Nightmare 4. Nightmare 5, the sad thing, I watched till my death, and then I just don't watch the rest of the movie.
Turn it off, that's funny.
Oh, what happens after that?
Like, oh, something with babies, nuns, eating, and swimming? Oh, we're good.
I did watch it again recently, because we do the little con tours and stuff, so I've been hanging out with cast from 5, we just did one, so I had to go back and watch the movie.
A refresher.
And we had Erica Anderson on the podcast, and she's great. And like, her death scene is so great. Yours and hers. Well, the three death scenes in it are really great. Like, so that's, you know, it definitely has some things going.
I like it. I saw it opening day. I loved it.
Yeah.
No, on its own. That's why I'm bummed that I think it, just like you said, on its own, it's a good little horror film or whatever, but it's just like, because of the timing, we kind of like, it didn't get the light shined on it that it should have, I guess. Yeah. You know?
So which was more fun to film?
I don't know, both of them. Different feel for both of them. That's a toss-up.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, completely different feel, because there were different directors, you know.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
And then I was again happy to be employed as an actor, like, yay, you know.
Oh my gosh.
In a big franchise.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think one day the craft service, the food was like a half hour late one day. It was terrible.
Oh, God. And then they
burned the set down.
They didn't have your cold pressed juice available and your sushi rolls and your latte with little foam soy milk, something.
You know, me and Mark, I just did a movie with Mark Patton, and he's so funny. We were laughing so hard because, like, Mark's a trooper. You know, he's not very diva-ish, you know, for the most part, I guess, you know. not to me, we were just on a movie set together, and it was so funny because we did have people that come, oh, are you okay? Would you like anything? And you're always like, no, no, I'm fine. You know, I'll get it myself. And then Mark was like, you know, we made a funny joke. Like, you could just, then because people are so eager to like help you, you know, you got like three different production assistants asking you for, you know, are you fine? So then you just go, man, I'd really like a water. That sounds good right now. I think I'm going to go get a water. And then like, before you know it, here's your, like 10 people are like, hey, I heard, you know, and then they start like, I'm going to get him water. I'm going to get him water. You're like, oh my God.
Sparkling, tap, bottled, what brand? Ice cubes.
This is a Pellegrino. What the fuck is this shit?
Throw it at them.
Okay. So which set had more drama?
Yeah.
Number one, I would say number one. What's it called? Four. Drama, I guess. But yeah, you could see it sometimes because there was like, I don't know, stuff that I'm like not that guy. I'm too busy having fun. So
which in your opinion had better overall death scenes?
Oh man, let me see. That's a tough one because like the cockroach scene is all time. I think it's crazy. And that like the baby there, when they feed the girl to death, and those are in two separate movies. So it's like, yeah. I'd have to say five. Cause my death scene's pretty cool. And it's like, out of all the death scenes in Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm kind of in the top 10 sometimes. I'm up there.
Yeah,
for sure.
Nice. Nice. Okay. On to the trivia ish.
These are trivia questions. Which has a higher body count?
Oh, I don't know. Do you guys know?
We know. I wanted to see if you knew.
Five.
No, it's actually
six. Number four with six people.
Yeah, four had six people. Number five only had three deaths.
Wow. Again, budget cuts.
When we even looked this up, I was even surprised because we've seen part five a bunch of times, but for some reason, I think because the death scenes are so intricate, I was like, wow, they only killed three people in it.
Yeah.
The more I think about it, right. That's really wild. Yeah, it's a wow. You know, and then, man, it's funny because, yeah, they start right off in four. You know, they kill Kenny Sagos's character right off, and then they start going at it. So, yeah, I guess so. In five, they don't – it's kind of a slow – right. They don't really –
Okay, and this is a very important one. In which one did you take off your shirt?
Oh, definitely did a scene in Nightmare 5 where I was, like, with high-waisted jeans, very tight high-waisted jeans.
That is correct. It is so funny. I was wondering, was that their call? Or were you like, hey, I'm going to wear no shirt and high jeans today?
Their call? I don't know. Yeah, it was like, yeah, it's their call. They're like, we're at a pool party. Why, you know, beefcake, get a shirt off.
Which featured the Freddy one-liner, wanna suck face?
Oh, that's four.
Nice, nice. Okay, now This is a tough one, though. Which one featured Freddie using the word bitch more times?
That's like Rick and Morty, that show. They fucking say bitch all the time on that show. And it's like, every time I hear it, I'm like, that's fucking Robert Englund. You guys know that, right? I'm like, use it. It's in pop culture everywhere. And it's Robert. I don't know. When does it, what I'd have to say... When does he talk the most? Yeah. Oh, four? Does he say it in four the most?
It's actually five. He says it once in four to Alice. He says, you think you got what it takes? I've been guarding my day for a long time, bitch.
Good job. Good job, Matt.
And then in part five, he says it twice. Once to Amanda Kruger, says, we'll see, bitch. And then my favorite of all, bon appetit, bitch, to Greg.
I'm just going to let you say all of them.
Man, they all blend together because that's like his favorite fucking... What do you call that phrase or whatever?
Catherine, yep. Last one.
Okay. Which featured Alice's dad?
Four.
And five.
It's a trick question. He's in five too.
Oh, the graduation.
Yes. Trick question. So, you know, I know we've talked a ton about Nightmare 4 and 5, but I wanted to get to some of the present stuff you've been involved in, because before we ask about Reunion from Hell 2, I read in an article that you were making a return to horror in like a vampire film called Nightfall. Is that happening, or has that filmed?
Finished it. It's a movie and small movie, but looks really cool. Super awesome director named Renee Perez. Bunch of really good looking actresses and actors, me. No, but I play like it's a vampire, it's horror. I play a commando that serves a vampirist. I work, you know, kind of like, and that's basically it. And then we go, And there's a story where we sacrifice people for the vampirist. I work for her, but the way it looks really good. Like as far as how the movie looks. And it's like, I was super, that was like a super fun project and that's done. It'll be out. There's still post-production. I don't really know, you know, how long it takes, you know, I know they're putting a score on that movie as we speak. So it's getting done. It'll be out. And then that'll get distribution and probably not like big, like distribution, like people think like at the movies, but it'll be at like Target and Walmart and all that, like nationally distributed, or I'm not even saying that word right, but that's the way this guy works. He's kind of anti-Hollywood in a way. Uh-huh. Because like, no, I'm going to do it on my own. So that's what he did. And he's a really talented director. And
that's so just cool.
Yeah.
Called Nightfall. You'll see, it'll be out. It'll either be streaming or like somehow some kind of, I don't know. And who knows if somebody gets a hold of it, that has more money and then they'll put their, you know, Hollywood, if they like it, they'll pay for it. So I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed for that one.
That's really cool. We'll see. We definitely are going to look for it because I had read about it. And then, I wanted to know when it was going to come.
As soon, obviously, I'll be the first to tell everybody about it when it finally gets out there. But it'll be out there. It's going to get definitely be. I'm not using the right word, but it's getting distribution.
Yeah.
But it won't be a release like how they do movies, you know, because we're basically dodging Hollywood because they're kind of full of crap. You know, they're trying to say these are the rules, and we're like, no, this is the rules. We're making a movie, and then we're going to put it out on our own because we don't really want to deal with all your crap. So
yeah, good for him and good for you guys.
Everyone can do that. He's got his, like I said, he does 3 movies a year and he doesn't want to, he's like happy guy. Doesn't really, he's not desperate. You know, he's not like trying to sell you on anything or get followers or all that. He's just like, no, this is what I do. And then he's like, fuck you, Hollywood. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, we also saw, obviously you were mentioning that you recently filmed another horror sequel called Reunion from Hell 2, where you're reuniting with Lisa Wilcox and also Mark Patton from Nightmare 2. And I'm just wondering, like, how did this project come to be?
Yeah, so we do cons, right? We do conventions. And Hayden Newman is an actor director, and he'd done Reunion from Hell 1, which is a movie, his movie. And I was at a convention in like North Carolina, or in like Raleigh or somewhere in North Carolina, and or Virginia or somewhere. We were just in the South doing a little tour, and Hayden's table was at one end, and mine's, we were kind of neighbors, you know, because all the Nightmare people were at this end, and then he was here talking about his new movie. And then over like the course of a day or two, we hit it off as friends. And then like that night over drinks at the bar, he's like, I want to put you in a movie. And I'm like, okay. And then he'd already cast Lisa. And so they wrote me a part in there, and Mark had already had a part in it also. So it was like super fun. It ended up being a super fun project, and it ended up, you know, that also looks really good. You know, I've seen parts of it. And so, and it's a lot of fun because it's all the Nightmare reunions, Mark, Lisa. I mean, we weren't in the same movie as Mark, but it's still Nightmare people. And it had like a good energy. The whole cast and crew was like pretty upbeat and fun. And so I think it's going to do well too.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Do you know when we can catch this? Like, this sounds like, this is like a Nightmare fan's dream, you know?
Yeah. I mean, not because I'm so into myself and Lisa and Mark, but it is that too. It's super cool. And Mark is super funny in it. Like, he has his laugh and he's super funny in it. And so like, and it's a slasher. It's a full fucking horror film. You know what I mean? So it's like,
even better.
I think it looks great. I think it's going to be a lot of fun for people to check it out. And then again, there's like, it's done, but you know, post-production, they're probably like doing a teaser trailer first and then final production. And that just got finished like 3 weeks ago. So
that's awesome. Then, what a big return to horror for you. Like two movies. And
hopefully, you know, and then, like I said, I do other stuff. I go by Hot Shit Hassle, H-A-U-T-E, Hot Shit. And, I do comedy once in a while, and, been doing that. And I just got upstaged in Canada. No, I was supposed to do a thing in Canada, but a bigger star kind of slid in there and took over. So that happens. But yeah, so we'll see what's next. You know, I don't want to jinx anything. So
at what point did you know that like Nightmare on Elm Street was not going away? Like, I mean, like, was there a period of time where it kind of teetered off and then like it came back like with a vengeance?
Yeah. Did you think you'd be talking about it 30 plus years later?
Here's what's crazy. No, absolutely. So I went through, you know, after my did Nightmare. I did the another Nightmare. I did a couple shows, and then I did a series that never took off. Robert Russler was in it with me. It was called The Outsider, based on
series. Yeah. I saw that
TV show. So, and, you know, that TV show didn't take off, and that would have been like, you know, a big deal for me to be like on a solid TV show for a couple of years, but that never happened. And then, yeah, Nightmare stuff kind of faded. My career kind of faded, and I ended up joining the military. And then it wasn't until Freddy versus Jason that, like, all of a sudden it was like, oh yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street's pretty cool. You know what I mean? And so people kind of like got into the Freddy versus Jason, or people was like, oh, have you heard of that? And of course, you know, yeah, I'm in one of those movies, you know? And then when I got out of the Army, 2017-ish, you know, not that long ago, but it's been a long time since Nightmare. And it was amazing how, like, at the cons and like a whole younger generation, 20 years younger than me, were like, they were into Nightmare on Elm Street, into actually all of them, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, Friday the 13th. And it's just like, it's almost like, I guess I can understand, because I didn't get into like Led Zeppelin until I was in my 20s. And they were, you know, that was years before. So I can dig it. Like, people just were like, they were out, it became popular again.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And then because of the conventions, we've been able to, like, you know, travel to cities and go to Europe and, you know, all just because of the franchise, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. Robert Englund, in all seriousness, Robert Englund is more recognizable, you know, Freddy Krueger, than like almost any star that I've ever met. You know what I mean? Like, I've met a lot of big stars, but no one as big as Robert. You can go anywhere and go, oh, Freddy Krueger there. Oh, yeah. You know, they know about
him. Yeah.
I mean,
and then you're like, what, you are you from outer space? How do you not, have you never heard of Freddy Krueger?
Yeah.
This is a silly question, but obviously, I mean, do you still keep in touch with the people from 4 and 5?
Absolutely. Yeah, we do. Because I mean, yeah, there's a few. Yeah, we do. When Robert is super busy, so I don't see him, but I just talked to Lisa. I got to we were in a cabin up in the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee, which is super fun, you know? And then, what's it called? The convention thing is kind of cool. Well, you know, maybe once or twice a year, we'll get to run into each other. And then, you know, when you do a movie like that and you're on a franchise, it's kind of unique, like being on a sports team, I think, or maybe being on, you know, the band team that won that year for the best band ever, you know, you're kind of like these weirdos that were on the same team 30 years ago, but it was, you know, now we have this unique, really unique story, you know.
That's so cool. I love that.
I mean, and you said you do a lot of conventions. What's the most common thing you get asked at these conventions?
I don't know. I mean, you know what? I don't know if it's what I noticed the common theme of it is, which, because at first I was like, what do you guys want me, when they approached me about conventions? Or I was like, you're out of your fucking mind, right? You want me to ask people to take a picture with me and then pay me? I was like, wait a minute. Ridiculous. And then sure enough, that's what you do. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh wow, there's actually people. And then the thing of it is what I've learned, at first I was like, this is fucking insane. There's no way that people would even show up. And then they do. You're like, whoa. And so the fans are like hardcore. They don't care what the mainstream is. They don't care. But if they're Nightmare on Elm Street fans, that they love Nightmare on Elm Street, and they're not going to change. Does that make sense? Almost like,
yeah. We're those people.
Yeah, we are those people. We're the people that would go to those conventions.
Most loyal fans. They're loyal fans. And if you've ever, that's all I can say, you know what I mean? They're super loyal fans. And it's like, and man, just, if you don't believe me, I could have a GoPro on at these conventions and talk to people just like we are now about this, the movie that I did 25, 30 years ago, or whatever.
Oh, we believe you. Cause we've been to a lot of those conventions. Yeah. And these are like our people, you know, they're very loyal, dedicated. They follow you throughout your career.
Yeah, I haven't been to a convention where you've been yet.
Where are you guys at? What state are you guys in?
We're right here.
I live in Sherman Oaks and Tim lives in West Hollywood, but we've been to a number of conventions, I think, but no like Nightmare specific ones,
yeah,
right?
No.
I got super lucky. Like, what's it called? I got to go to, there's one in Monsterpalooza. It's in Pasadena.
Yes, and yes.
So the same day that my daughter was born. No, my daughter was born on Thursday. I was supposed to be at the con on Friday, but I stayed with my wife. But I had a baby and then got to go to, I went for Saturday and Sunday, but I had a baby and then went to Monsterpalooza in the same weekend. It was pretty exciting.
Oh wow. My gosh. Is their name Monsterpalooza?
Her nickname. So Danny, we have one final question for you, and we ask this to everyone that we talk to on the podcast. And you've already told us some tidbits, I think, that would fall under this, but we're going to ask you this and give you a little second to think. But it's what is one thing that you can tell us about your experience working on either Nightmare 4 or Nightmare 5 that you've never told any other interviewer, publication, convention, podcast? Just one thing that you've never told in any other interview about your experience working on either of those films.
And it doesn't have to be scandalous. You could just say, like, Rennie Harlan's favorite food was chicken.
Or it can be Rennie Harlan slapped me after a long day of filming.
Right.
Just kidding.
Oh, no, man. Well, that's kind of like a secret behind the scenes. One of the times, you know, you have to go get these masks made, you know, the things that you put over your, whatever you call it, you know, the cast or whatever.
Yeah.
You have to go. You have to go in. One of the dudes let me smoke pot.
While you were getting the mask made?
Oh my God. That must've been like the ultimate high.
Yeah, 'cause I had to fill my hands and he held it up to my mouth while I just inhaled a little bit.
wait. So they held the joint up to your mouth while you were getting the That's amazing.
Did it calm you down? Because people get claustrophobic in that.
Right. It did. I had to now I could hear my breathing and I was like, really, like, and it made me giggle. I couldn't laugh. So I had to be like, because you have to hold your face expression. So now I'm laughing, you know, and my face was supposed to be like this. Like, I swear. So I'm already like this. And then they're like, you're going to have to hold that for a while. And then the goo is starting to come down. And then right before, he's like, "Do you smoke pot?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Here."
That's amazing.
Put it out, and then they put these things in your nose, and then it goes. Oh, and then they're like, "Okay, make your face." And I had to hold my mouth like ah, and then I had to hold it like that until this shit actually like hardens. You know what I mean? It's really weird, but it came out.
I would say that would probably be a lot easier to do it when you are high than just like normal. Because
Concentrating. I was totally into it. You know what I mean? I was like, I can feel it sticking to my face. You know, I said, yeah, I can feel it. You know, and then they're like, okay, wiggle your face around. It'll start coming off. And I'm like, it's coming off. And so, you know, it's like, it peels off of you. Right. Well, you know, also though, there's so many times where I'm like fucking around or whatever. And we had like an ambulance and we were like, you know, there's a scene where like, don't do it. He's allergic. And Lisa like hits. Like, so we had a real ambulance and we were driving down the street and around or whatever. And it was super fun just to drive down the street and throw the lights on and just like watch everyone get out of your way.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Anyhow, it was pretty fun.
That's a great one.
Well, look, this has been so much fun for us. Really. We were so thankful and grateful for you for taking the time to chat with us.
Hey, nice meeting you guys. Super cool. And thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, thanks for being so honest and friendly and cool and funny.
Yeah.
It was you guys. Super nice meeting you guys. Very, 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 very fun. Very fun.
Okay, awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, okay?
Guys, have a great weekend, guys. Nice meeting you. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care.
Happy Saturday. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time.
This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch, and co-produced and edited by Jacob Randall.
We now release episodes every Monday, and in each episode, we either review horror movies that just came out or interview stars and insiders from iconic horror films. You can stream all our episodes directly from our website, that's happyhorrortime.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And remember, our reviews do contain spoilers, so we always post the movies we're discussing a few days in advance on our social media pages, so listeners can check them out ahead of time.
And speaking of social media, make sure you follow our pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Happy Horror Time. We even started putting our interviews up on YouTube along with our horror short film, Come In. You've got to check it out. You can find us on YouTube by searching for Happy Horror Time.
If you'd like to support the podcast, please sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/happyhorrortime.
That's patreon.com/happyhorrortime. Patrons get access to our growing library of monthly bonus episodes and other fun benefits like ad-free episodes that are out a day in advance, our monthly newsletter, participation in polls, and autographed Happy Horror Time stickers.
Woo! And if you'd like to contact us, please send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. Tell us what you love, how sexy you think we are, whatever.
I'm Matt Emmert.
And I'm Tim Murdoch.
And we hope you have a happy whore time.